In this episode of Movie Rollers, we're going to review Fading Gigolo, Neighbours and Locke. It's time for Movie Rollers. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And Yazdi as well.
Movie Rollers is your weekly list of film reviews, movie news, and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming, or in the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, this show is for you. Greetings all.
Hello.
Hello.
We have Yazdi once again over Skype, so apologies that his sound isn't quite as crystal clear as it normally is.
But the cat did come up, the other cat.
The cat did arrive for this, is coming for this podcast, so yes, Yazdi's feline attracting
sultry
skills
tones.
It's obviously all in the voice.
Yeah,
well, thanks a lot.
Well, no, she hasn't come up. Callie came, so
so we touched on this in the last podcast, but I thought we might talk about what Rashmi and I were able to go to just a couple of weeks ago, which was Quentin Tarantino's Hateful Eight table read. And just by way of background, those of you that follow the movie press may have heard back in January that even though Quentin Tarantino released a first draft of his script for a movie called The Hateful Eight to only six people, somehow that movie was released on the internet.
The
script got released on the movie wasn't released. The script got released on the internet. And a website known as Gawker, I think, was responsible for posting a direct link. He's now suing them. But he got very pissy about it and decided to say, I'm not going to make this movie. So we all thought that The Hateful Eight was lost forever. And then he got in touch with Film Independent, or they got in touch with him. And the idea of doing a table read with a live studio audience came about, and Rashmi and I were able to secure tickets. Yazdi, you were out of town that weekend, but It was just a fabulous experience. So we had, who was there, Rashmi?
Kurt Russell, Samuel L. Jackson, Quentin Tarantino, obviously.
Tim Roth. Amber Tamblyn.
Marsden. The guy from Reservoir
James
Dogs.
James Marsden.
The guy from Reservoir Dogs.
Yeah, I think that's his name.
James Marsden?
Not James Marsden.
We'll remember him. And Bruce Dern.
Bruce Dern, yes. Our favorite Bruce Dern was there. It was a cast of about 11 people, I would say, in total. I love Tarantino. This was like a heavenly experience for me to be in the same room as Tarantino, watching him do his magic on stage live. What an incredible experience.
So we should explain to people who haven't heard of what a table read is, just what it is. And a table read is something that's typically done during the kind of early pre-production of a movie where the actors will sit down and literally read their way through the script. As they do, they kind of figure out how they're going to play these characters, and they get notes from the director on the kind of intonations they should use or what his vision for that scene is. What we had here was the characters basically, instead of sat around a table, they were all sat on a stage, all lined up, and there were no visual elements to be seen here. It was really them just reading their parts, often with script in hand. I mean,
yes.
they had about 3 days to practice and almost no time to learn their lines. So, they all did a marvelous job, I thought.
It could possibly have been the whole movie, right? They were just doing selected scenes.
Nope,
it was the whole movie start to finish. And actually, the good news is that Quentin Tarantino said right at the end, he is rewriting the movie, and the ending that we saw is the only time that ending would be seen. So now I'm very excited because there will be a movie of The Hateful Eight, and it will have a different ending.
But it was the entire script.
All 200 and something pages.
Yeah, I mean, Tarantino is so brilliant a filmmaker that I don't want him to repeat himself. And so I wish he would. He's done his Western now already. And I wish he would just do a movie in another genre. He should do a James Bond, or he should do a comedy or something, or a romantic comedy or something. So I'm not that excited because this script sounds to me too much like his last film.
No, it's nothing like the last one.
Unchained.
I'll disagree with Rashmi on that one. I mean, I think to me, it was very much the world of Django Unchained. It didn't have the slavery element, but it had, you know, the controversial black character that the, you know, Django had. And I'm really speaking of the Samuel L. Jackson character
here. Oh, okay.
And it had a lot of the standard Tarantino tropes, you know, the Mexican standoff. And he has a knack that very few writers seem to have of being able to raise the stakes slowly in any scene to a point where it's almost unbearable. And it's all done through situation and dialogue, but two characters enter a scene and they have no relationship to each other. And then within a few minutes and a few carefully placed details about their history, you realize that you're sitting on a time bomb and that this situation is about to get nasty. And then he just holds it there. And, you know, that to me has always been the classic example of that is the opening scene of Inglourious Basterds with Christoph Waltz and the, mm-hmm. you know, the little banter that the two characters have between them there and that whole scene and the way that scene becomes so tense. This script is kind of full of that. So.
And again, a lot of the playing with the time sequence, which is really smart. So, yay!
So, yeah, fun. And I do hope that this movie gets made. The script is actually still available online if you are creative about Googling. I won't say that I have got it downloaded onto my computer at all. I will not admit to that. But it is out there, and if you have any interest in kind of reading screenplays, it's actually quite a fun read.
But you wouldn't know because you haven't read it.
Yes, that's right. I don't have it at all, right. or have read it at all. Not me, no. Right. That would be a different Joe.
Right.
So let's talk about our movies of the week this week. Where should we start?
So I have The Introduction to Neighbours. So this is not a Judd Apatow movie, but it has a lot of the Judd Apatow cast. Seth Rogen, Zac Efron and Rose Byrne lead the cast of Neighbours. This is a comedy about a young couple who are suffering from arrested development, who are forced to live next to a fraternity house following the birth of their newborn baby. This is actually directed by Nicholas Stoller, and it's written by Andrew J. Cohen and Brendan O'Brien, and it stars, like I said, Seth Rogen, Rose Byrne, Zac Efron, but also Christopher M. Platts, Dave Franco, and Jake Johnson, amongst others. So, yes, you're the only one that's seen this.
But we should also add, just remember that Nick Stoller is the same director who did Forgetting Sarah Marshall and Get Him to the Greek, both of which are movies that did very well, both critically and commercially, and both of which I quite liked.
Favorites personally, but
I believe he also did The 5-Year Engagement, right? Oh, I believe so.
Definitely, yeah, not right. My cup of tea then. So, Yazdi, I wasn't so sad to miss this one, but I know it's rating really well, so I'm very interested to see what you think of this.
Yeah, I'm almost hesitant to say too much about this movie because you know, comedy is such a funny genre where if somebody tells you something is funny, then while you're watching it, you are almost primed not to laugh because you expect to laugh. And anytime you expect to laugh, you don't laugh. So maybe that's the key to the movie is I went into this movie with very, very few, very little expectations. And I was very, very pleasantly surprised. I don't typically laugh out loud in movies, but I was laughing. You know, I was laughing pretty much consistently through this movie, but you know, it's more than the sum of its parts. And that, you know, it's not just vulgar, silly, fraternity kind of humor. I think it all amounts to something, and it kind of transcends a little bit. You know, it's kind of laughing about this whole, you know, frat house kind of, you know, growing up, being a man child versus growing up and taking responsibility kind of thing. But at the same time, it kind of is very thoughtful about it. And it has something to say about, you know, growing up and becoming mature. So, like I said, I'm reluctant to praise this movie too much, but let me just say that it completely gets its job done. And it'll work as multiple levels. For those who just want to laugh, you know, through a movie, you've got it. And then if you want a little bit more, there's that as well.
Okay. So, you know, I have this kind of love-hate relationship with Seth Rogen do you think this is one where he's just being Seth Rogen, or is this, you know, a better version of Seth Rogen than we've seen in the past?
Well, does he smoke weed?
What do you think?
Of course, yeah.
Of course he does. I mean, my love affair with Seth Rogen is long ended. I mean, I'm totally over Seth Rogen. I don't think he's ever going to surprise me. I you know, he was an agreeable screen presence. There's something very laid back and casual and not working hard about him, but I'm over that. So you know, he's there, he's the lead in the movie, but for me it was everybody else who really really impressed me. And I think rightly so, Rose Byrne is getting a lot of, if you read the review, she's getting a lot of credit, and she has impeccable timing. I mean, she really does. And you know, she was in Bridesmaids, she's been around for such a long time. She was on the show Damages, and who knew that she is, you know, she has these perfect line readings. I mean, she has some of the best lines in the movies, and also some of the best plot twists revolve around her. And then the other two
people... she's got a lead role in this, right?
Well, she plays Zac Efron's wife.
Okay,
yeah.
Because
she plays Seth Rogen's wife.
I so want to see her on the poster for a movie as a lead, because I think she delivers so consistently.
Yeah,
as these sidebar characters.
Yeah, she got my attention in Bridesmaids, I think, and then I loved her. Joe, you and I saw that lovely movie called I Give It a Year. And she was just delightful in that movie. Really, really, just a lovely, lovely film that was. So, yeah, I'm glad that she's getting good press.
And then I think, you know, I hate to say this, but, you know, this might be the role that Zac Efron was born to play. I mean, you know, this is, it suits him like, you know, he fits into it like you know, your hand in a glove. And then
Dave Franco.
Dave Franco, thank you. You know,
plays, the younger brother
plays. The fraternity. You know, his sidekick in the fraternity, and Christopher Mintz-Plasse is in the fraternity as well. And you know, it's goofy and it's silly, and some of it is filthy. And you know, there are some scenes which, you know, have used CGI because the actors would never do the stuff that's being done. But in spite of that, I mean, I think 7 out of the 10 jokes work. So you stop caring about the 3 which don't work. And there are some peripheral characters which don't go anywhere. And I suspect that it was a fatter movie. It was a fatter script. And they've just pared things down to bring it to a crisp, you know, hour and a half, which I think was a great idea. But so not everything, you know, ties up perfectly, but it's a good time at the cinemas. I mean, I think this is more than above average fare.
Okay, score it then.
You know, 7 out of 10. And you know, on a Friday night, it might even be an 8 out of 10.
Wow.
It's just a great, you know, fun time in the cinemas. And you should know, I have very little tolerance. I usually, you know, don't care for these stupid, you know, fraternity movies. But this one gets it right. And now, mind you, I really, really, really liked Forgetting Sarah Marshall. And I even more like 5-Year Engagement. So there's something about this director which resonates with me, and it works here. I mean, I've never been a frat house person. I don't, and neither am I, you know, a grown-up man with a child. Well, I'm a grown-up man, but I don't have a child. So I didn't particularly have anything to latch onto with either the Zac Efron character or the Seth Rogen character, but I still was engaged with them, and I you know, I was in the movie, so... I would say,
is it more like Getting to the Greek or more like forgetting Sarah Marshall?
Definitely more than Forgetting Sarah Marshall.
Okay, because yeah. that seems to me, you know, those are two ways of kind of assessing this director, and both of which had their good points. But Getting to the Greek was more the slapstick kind of crude humor, primarily due to Russell Brand, I'm sure. But
and I was going to say, thank God he's not in this one.
I mean, the movie has a very, you know, the premise of the movie is that this couple with a child finds out that, you know, this fraternity house is moved next door. And at some point it becomes like the War of the Roses. I mean, each, you know, either side of them will do whatever it takes to bring the other one down. And it becomes this game of chicken in terms of, you know, who's going to destroy the other more. And the stakes just keep getting higher and higher and higher. So it's pretty well crafted.
Okay. Yeah. Sounds good. So from old young boys to old boys, I guess, with Fading Gigolo.
Yes, so the very undervalued actor John Turturro, who's been in so many films, makes his fifth directorial venture with the movie Fading Gigolo. He plays the lead character Fioravente, who is a bartender, and who finds himself remarkably surprised to find that he may have the chops to be a successful gigolo. Through no intention on his part, he realizes that he might actually be able to make money by pleasing women. And his friend Murray, played by Woody Allen, becomes his manager, and the two of them start this business where, you know, Fioravente starts making house calls to women who need pleasure. And eventually, the two of them learn lessons about love and what it means and all that good stuff. The movie is directed by John Turturro and written by him. And he also plays the lead actor. And Woody Allen makes one of his very rare cinematic acting forays in a film that is not directed by him. The movie also co-stars Sharon Stone, Liev Schreiber, Sofia Vergara, and Vanessa Paradis. So I haven't seen it. I believe, Rashmi, you're the only one who's seen it. Is it worth seeking out?
No. I'm absolutely embarrassed for this movie and everyone in it except John Turturro. And remember, I love Woody Allen, but I was literally cringing every time he came on the screen. I mean, this is like the HBO series Hung, except it's not even that funny. And it's just really awkward. I just don't understand any of the story. I don't get any of the characters. It's so bizarre. It's really, really bizarre. And then there's this whole backdrop of like a Jewish Orthodox community. And all I can say is Liev Schreiber's character is so bizarre, as is Vanessa Paradis, as is Sharon Stone, as is Sofia Vergara, who actually the last two don't even feel like they're acting.
So I can't really say that I watched this movie because I didn't watch it with the right level of intent. I think, Rashmi, you put it on because we had the screener and it was kind of late in the evening when we started watching it. But I did pay enough attention to the movie to kind of speak here on this review. And to Rashmi's point, this really is a very strange product. John Turturro, I don't know if he's directed before, but this movie has... Oh, so do you know what he's directed?
This is his fifth movie.
This is his fifth movie.
As a director.
Because it comes across as a movie that's... Inept is too strong a word, but it really does struggle at times to make me believe in anything that's going on, right? And I know it's meant to be a comedy, but I just don't buy the interactions between any of the characters, and some of the situations that they're put into are so clumsily written that, you know, the Sofia Vergara character is just a one-dimensional, larger-than-life, very much like
Sophie. Pair of boobs on legs.
But that's what she is. You know, she has these big lines like, a woman is meant to be looked at, you know. And when she says it, instead of kind of feeling what that line is trying to imply, right, that, you know, women are passionate creatures and they you know, they need to have a man in their life, you know, for whatever. You just want to laugh, right? So that moment is totally lost. And that happens time and again in every scene in the movie. And there's this kind of love story thing going on there as well. But the whole thing really falls apart. Woody Allen is really horrible in this. And he's never been the greatest of actors. But it's a plausibility issue. Nothing seems to make any sense at all. And that's where it fell down for me. And that's where I lost interest.
And so here's the problem. If you direct and you write and you star in the movie, inherently something's gonna fall down, okay? Because it takes too much effort. And I think inherently you have to buy into the fact that this guy who works in a flower shop and is in his later years of life is suddenly now a dancer, an expert masseur, a cook, a plumber, and a gigolo.
I want to see that film.
I mean, it's just crazy. So I don't even want to say anything more about this movie. So Joe, do you even want to score this movie?
I don't think it's fair for me to score it because I honestly, I probably only watched about 2/3 of it. But what I will say is that there is a reason that I only watched 2/3 of it because, you know, I was there in the beginning and I quickly made my mind up that this wasn't worth my while, which I think is very harsh. And I try never to be that harsh. I mean, you know, I admire the filmmakers for even, you know, getting the film made, but really it doesn't work. Yazdi will probably love it.
I hope not.
I'm kidding, but this is kind of a movie that I think, Yazdi, you might be a little bit more on your wavelength than mine.
Okay, now I have to see it.
Okay, so for me, hammy dialogue is not saved by a stellar cast. There is some warmth created by the movie, but just not enough to save it or carry it through. I can't wait for this one to actually fade from my mind. 2 out of 10.
2?
Yeah. On a generous day, 3.
I don't think... I mean, I think that's harsh. Again, I'm not in a position to rate it, but wow, that's you are offended by the movie.
I was offended by the movie. I was actually offended by the movie. I was offended by its portrayal of this Greek Orthodox, Jewish Orthodox community. I was offended by Sharon Stone and Sofia Vergara's one-dimensional cardboard characters. I was offended by Woody Allen's awful acting and the fact that he has this strange African-American family around him. And most of all, I was offended by the fact that there was this all-singing, all-dancing, all-knowing man who had lived his whole life managing a flower shop. And for now, some reason, he became a gigolo that everyone bought into. It was like the Emperor's New Clothes.
Very well said. Now I don't want to see it.
So, Yazdi, take us out on a good note. Lock.
This is a movie which is a product of writer-director Stephen Knight, who I think has done a lot more writing than he has done directing. I know he's been credited with a movie called Redemption, starring Jason Statham, which I'm not too familiar with. But certainly his writing, a couple of movies that we both really liked. One was Eastern Promises. Mm-hmm. Rashmi, you remember that movie?
Yeah, I liked that one.
Was terrific. And also Dirty Pretty Things, which I think I've seen, but... I remember liking that one a lot as well. So this movie stars Tom Hardy, Tom Holland, Bill Milner, Andrew Scott. And the basic premise, I'll just read straight from the log line here on Rotten Tomatoes, is that Ivan Locke, played by Tom Hardy, has worked diligently to craft a life that he has envisioned, dedicating himself to the job that he loves and the family that he adores. On the eve of the biggest challenge of his career, Ivan receives a phone call that sets in motion a series of events that will unravel his family, job, and soul. All taking place over the course of one absolutely riveting car ride, Locke is an exploration of how one decision can lead to the complete collapse of a life. So, Yazdi, that sounds intriguing.
Yeah.
I'm right on the Rotten Tomatoes page here, and the movie is pulling a strong 90% rating, which certainly has me intrigued. Big fan of Tom Hardy, would love to know whether you thought this was worthwhile watching.
Yeah, if it were up to me, I'd make sure it got a 99% rating on Rotten Tomatoes. Remember we saw a movie a couple years ago with Ryan Reynolds called Buried?
Yes.
And the whole movie was about Ryan Reynolds in a coffin. The whole movie. I mean, there was, you don't see any other actor, and you're confined in this space for 2 hours with it. And you would think that in the history of cinema, everything that can be done has already been done. And then somebody tries something new and experimental like they did with Buried. This movie is not quite as claustrophobic as Buried, but it's essentially the same concept. It's about this guy in a car. That's it. That's the entire length of the movie. He's the only person you will see in the whole movie. You don't see any of the other actors. And he is... you know, for 2 hours or an hour and a half, he's in this car. And it sounds like a gimmick. It sounds like the, you know, kind of thing where somebody said, you know, let me see if I can do that. And one of the joys of the movie is to realize, at least I went in knowing this about the movie, but so quickly at about the 20-minute point, I realized that this movie is going to very easily transcend that gimmick. Yes, it's going to be about that, but... it almost only uses that as a springboard. And I think I think it was Truffaut who very famously said, all you need to make a movie is a gun and a beautiful girl or something like that, a gun and a beautiful girl. You don't need much to make a movie. And again, Locke makes it very clear that you don't need much to make a movie. All you need is a kick-ass script and you need a good actor. That's all you need. And I think if this movie works at all, it's through the miracle of Tom Hardy's face. I mean, this is an actor we have seen so many times before. And until somebody would have given him an opportunity, I mean, he was excellent in he's been excellent in so many other movies before. But you give a good actor an opportunity like this and you can see what he can bring to the screen. And, not everything about the movie works. The person I saw it with said it's not a great film, but it's a good film. I would actually disagree with them. I think it is a great film because all it is it's a chronicle of a man under duress. And it's not, this person is probably having the worst evening of his life, but it's not about him being, it's not even very evident until quite late into the movie whether he's a good guy or a bad guy. And the movie, the way the script has been put together, it very, very slowly peels away these, onion skins off of it. And as things start clicking into place, you become really invested. And, I'm giving a lot of credit to Tom Hardy, but there are four or five other characters with whom he speaks consistently through the movie. And every one of those, Hardy is great because the camera is on his face the whole time in the movie. But these other people, they just have their voices, and they form fully fleshed out characters better than I've seen in other movies. And I think that that's, credit to a very, very good script.
Yeah. I mean, Hardy is, in my mind, transformational. He is a chameleon.
Yeah, but
did this remind you of any of the other characters he's played, or he's complete? This is fresh for him.
This is very fresh because, even as you find out more about this character, it's not the kind of character you have typically seen in other movies. And it comes off, maybe it's the accent that he has. The movie's set in the UK. And I don't know if it's an Irish accent or a Welsh accent, or it's not a British accent. There's something to his accent which kind of grounds him. But I don't even want to tell you too much about his character because it's a giveaway in terms of the story and the plot. But, at about the 1 hour point into the movie, you know everything about this character. You understand his situation, why he is the way he is and what he's going through. And even when you fully understand him, it's not a character we have seen before in movies. And and that's what I commend the script, because the script has fleshed together this person who you may know in real life, but I have not seen too many characters like that on the screen. There's a whole bunch of scenes where, I'm reluctant to say too much about the movie because it'll ruin it for people. But there is one particular interaction that occurs, which is so cheesy. It's very theaterish. It's very screenplayish. But Hardy completely makes it stick.
Hmm. Wow.
This is what I call, this is no net acting. He doesn't have the advantage of other actors. It's a dark, he's driving in the night. So for most times he's just driving along a road and he just has to rely on the script and acting to carry the whole movie. Gosh. And he does it.
So he's at his paycheck, it sounds like.
Well, I mean, he to me is an extraordinary actor just based on what he did with the Bane character in The Dark Knight Rises, where he was denied the opportunity of facial expression to convey a lot of that character's behaviors. And probably not the deepest of characters, but I think Bane was certainly an extreme presence on screen, very formidable. And everything he was done there was physical and tonal with his voice.
So, and he had to wear that horrible mask as well.
Well, that's the point I'm making. Yeah. He wasn't able to give us facial expressions to augment what he was trying to portray as a character. So to me, this is an actor that has a lot of things available to him in his tool bag with which to convey a line of dialogue. He doesn't rely on voice, face, physicality, or it's the full spectrum, and that to me is what makes him so remarkable. So I'm really excited to actually see him in this.
And you know, it's a very small movie. It's not lofty. It's I mean, to its great credit, I think this movie could have been very shrill with this particular script. It could have been very, like, you know, people would have been screaming and shouting at each other, but nobody really screams and shouts. I think the movie is a great accomplishment of tone,
mm-hmm.
because what this character, again, I don't want to say too much, but somebody else, you could say somebody else in the very same circumstances would behave very, very differently than how Locke behaves. And it's completely tied in with his personality. And I think the movie could have been a lot more flashier by have this character react differently, but it chooses instead to be more grounded. And I think that ultimately helps. I mean, for me, the movie where I first noticed Tom Hardy was the movie called Bronson. And Nicholas Winding Refn, who directed Drive, this was one of his earlier movies. And I mean, you can't take your eyes off of him. He plays a man who is in solitary confinement for 30 years, who's going crazy. And he kind of has this alter ego who he thinks he's also Charles Bronson. And Hardy is just amazing in it. And, you know, Roger Ebert used to say that, you know, there's so many actors who we think are terrible, but they just haven't been given the right opportunity to really shine. And so good for, you know, him being given the opportunity to do so. And, you know, there's nothing showy at all about his performance. It's all very restrained, but it all just comes together.
So score for us, Yazdi.
You know, before I score, I mean, I really want to encourage filmmakers who are making these small, cheap, almost experimental movies where you don't need much. You don't need CGI. You don't need, you know, 200 actors and extras and so forth. And I think we need to, you know, encourage that kind of filmmaking, which goes down to the bare bones. And so, it's a very, very, very easy 8 out of 10. And I think, you know, next time anybody complains that there isn't anything good playing in cinemas, you know, they should blame themselves for not seeking out a movie.
Is it accessible, Yazdi? I mean, that's all my one question is, because yeah. Buried is a movie that I've recommended to people only to get yelled at after the fact. And it sounds like the person that you saw this movie enjoyed it, but maybe not to the same extent. Since starting Movie Wallahs, we watch a lot of movies, so the things that are a little off the beaten track really appeal to us as reviewers. And if you're not watching as many films as we are, you oftentimes just look for something a little lighthearted, more escapism. Is this the kind of thing that I'm going to get yelled at if I recommend it to people?
Possibly. I mean, I recommended Before Midnight wholeheartedly to somebody, and they came back and they said they absolutely hated it. They said, I don't want to watch a movie where two people just keep talking for 2 hours.
Right.
So, you know, I think it all comes down to how structured somebody's boundaries are for what a film should be.
Right.
I mean, if you but want...
There are movies for film buffs and there are movies for a more general audience. So is this a film buff movie?
No, I mean, this doesn't seem like an experiment at all. It doesn't seem like a movie that's trying to do something different, or it's, you know what I mean? There's some movies which seem like, look, Mano Hands, or, you know, like, for example, I can't believe
Well, we watched the movie Enemy recently with Jake Gyllenhaal, and, uh-huh. and that's a film buff movie. I mean, that's a movie that I would really have a hard time recommending to anyone other than people who are really into their movies and want to see something that's a little off kilter.
See, I don't have the objectivity. I actually think if you like a good script, then this movie is for you. I think it's actually pretty mainstream.
Okay.
But again, you know, if you're horrified by the idea of just watching one person essentially take a series of phone calls over an hour and a half, then maybe it's not for you.
All right. Well, let's finish wrapping it up and see what you think.
Yeah. So, you know, like I said, in a very, very easy 8 out of 10, you know, I just admire movies which do something different, and while doing it, you know, exceed expectations. And I think this movie does that. It starts with a very simple gimmick, and then again, I'm reluctant to say too much about it, but I was genuinely moved by the movie.
Terrific.
And, you know, I should not be moved by this character. I should not, but I was very
interesting.
Terrific. Yeah. Well, I hope it hangs around in theaters long enough for us to get a chance to see it. If not, I suspect we'll be able to see it on Netflix sooner rather than later. But
yeah.
It seems to me that it's not necessarily one that would be, you'd be worse off for seeing at home.
Probably not. Yeah, you probably wouldn't be worse off seeing it at home. But I think if you like movies, you owe yourself to check it out.
Oh,
and
for not, sure.
And I'm going to call it, at least I know for a fact that Tom Hardy is going to be on my list of best actors for the year.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, let's wrap it up for today. Mail at movierollers.com, twitter.com/movierollers, and facebook.com/movierollers as well. Do check out our website. If you subscribe via iTunes and you don't often go to the movierollers.com website, do please visit as often as you can. We're doing a lot more written articles these days, so there's not just the podcast. If you subscribe via iTunes, that's great, but you're missing out on a lot of great content, primarily by Rashmi and Yazdi. So thanks, guys, for being so prolific on the website. I think we've got some really good material there, so do check that out. Until our next episode, it is too many movies and too little time. A good night from me.
And me.
And me as well.